Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 554.PS10407, certificate number 39867, the Guano Islands Act.
I'm just thinking about guano this week.
Oh, man, we talk about guano so much.
Came up in the show about phosphorus and phosphates.
Yeah.
Hopefully we haven't done too much guano, because that's what we're going to be spending an hour on today.
Can you have too much guano?
Well, that's what we're going to find out.
I guess it seems inexhaustible
at first, and yet...
If you work in a downtown office building, I would say too much guano would be not very much guano.
Have you ever been bird pooped on?
Yeah.
Because I got through the first 45 years of my life without getting bird pooped on.
No, I it's good luck, of course.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Science is verified?
Bird, yeah, it's considered good luck in pretty much every culture. But yeah,
for dry cleaners, it is.
Pooped on enough times in my long life, and by that I mean maybe three times.
That you think it's a conspiracy?
Well, no.
That you think the birds are out to get you?
I did... follow somebody's comment, weird comment. I was like, what the hell weird comment is that? And I went to someone's Facebook page where they really were a flat earther, and they had posts going back a year that I looked at that were all about chemtrails and what was the episode we did on the people that believe that the old buildings...
Oh, right.
From a lost civilization.
The whatever empire, the Tartarian empire.
The Tartarians. Empire. And they posted something about like a building in Tacoma where they were like, oh, look at the building that used to generate energy for all of Tartaria. And they had comments from people like, oh, we've lost so much in the coming years.
Who knew that Tacoma was thousands of years old? I didn't.
Well, and then a lot of stuff about like, every other post was something to the effect of... people that are ignorant and are, the dummies in the world who don't understand that, the exact same memes that all of my liberal friends use to, like, deride conservatives that are dumb, anti-vaxxers, but same memes, but just used.
But just used to describe people who think the earth is round. Yeah. That's funny.
But no, the getting pooped on has happened just enough times that now – if I'm under birds, if birds are doing some bird activity and I have to pass under them, I'm conscious of like...
You carry a little umbrella?
Well, I'm very much like, all right, you guys, I know your story. I know your scam. Because I think they do it on purpose.
I feel like it had never happened to me and then I was... You know that big heron nesting colony out by the Ballard Locks?
Yeah.
Like on the Magnolia
you
side?
You didn't get pooped on by a heron.
Yeah, it was a ton.
That's got to be a coffee cup full of poop.
It was a dramatic one. It kind of got me like at a kind of ricocheted, but yeah. I had a big smear on my shoulder and I was like, I think it took 45 years, but I just got pooped on by a bird.
Wow.
Very excited.
Amazing that would be the bird and not just like a pigeon or a seagull.
And speaking of herons, I was thinking about guano this week because I know you have a daughter who may like cartoons. Are you guys aware that
beep, beep.
Miyazaki-san's last movie is out? What is certain to be his final Japanese? Does she like Totoro's and Kiki's and all the rest?
Sure. I mean, she found Kiki, when she first watched it, maybe she was a little young, but she found it fairly slow moving. But who doesn't like Totoro?
Well, all those movies are a little bit contemplative by the speed of American animation.
Yeah, and I feel like as a six-year-old, she was like, what's going on here?
She had already been trained to expect anvils to be falling every few seconds.
Yeah, not a single person's been hit with a hammer.
These kids are just looking in a lake. Let's get on with it. The new movie is called Boy and the Heron in the U.S., and I watched it this week. And it's not one of his little simple, whimsical kids' movies with Kiki's and Totoro's. It's more one of his kind of cryptic fantasy epics.
Is it scary?
It's kind of intense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about a boy who loses his mom in World War II, and then for the rest of the movie, the next 2 hours, just gets menaced by large birds at every point. Mm-hmm. It's not just the titular heron. There's also giant budgies. Kind of mutated pelicans coming after this guy.
One of the defining characteristics of a budgie is that it's not huge.
Is that it's not a giant society. Yes, but these have passed through some kind of portal, and now they're like parakeet army. And as a result of being in, this is a movie, you know, lots of movies have anthropomorphized animals. Lots of movies have oversized animals. But few ever grapple with the problem of if or how they poop.
Oh.
But not this movie. Every time the birds show up, there is just poop everywhere.
Wow.
Really breaking new ground in children's animation.
Well, American kids love watching movies about post-World War II, like, orphans.
That's one that was tossed in for the Japanese viewers. And then for the American kids, he tosses in some poop.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I've seen these... DreamWorks trailers or Imagine or whatever it is. All these kids' movies have to have one fart joke in the trailer.
So I'm going to make a whole movie of just guano.
He sighs deeply. No, his movies are always kind of naturalistic. You know, lots of little observations of nature and weather and light and whatnot. And I think this time it's bird poop.
Bird poop.
He's worked his... He's 82 years old. He said almost everything he has to say except... on the subject of what it would be like if giant birds were just effing around with you constantly. And his take is there would be poop everywhere.
And do you feel like he believes that bird poop is lucky?
Oh, in the movie, it is never conveyed that way. You know, have you seen some of his later movies where it's actually the plot mechanisms are not entirely clear? We don't know if we're supposed to feel bad for this villain, or is this person trapped, or... why are our heroes being schemed against?
I've felt like that's true of all of his movies. Maybe I'm not as deep into it.
I think you're right. His oeuvre. They've gotten more cryptic and more baroque, which means on the internet I have to see people complaining about all the plot holes in a Miyazaki movie and just weeping for the future. But the poop made me think about a world that once revolved around bird poop. And my father-in-law, when he was staying with us a couple months ago, was just delighted in his recent discovery of the Guano Islands Act, really one of the strangest things that the U.S. Congress ever did.
Oh, I thought you were going to say one of the strangest conversations I've had with my father-in-law.
Oh, no, it's not even top 10. The origin of the Guano Islands Act goes back millennia.
How far back? Way back.
Off the coast of Western South America, the Japanese stream of warm water coming in from the, you know, clockwise from the North Pacific meets the Humboldt current of cold water coming up from Antarctica.
We deal with the weather that results from it all the time.
In this case, it turns out what I didn't know is that's a bummer for fish. Because you get cold water fish suddenly hitting warm waters that they hate, and they react to, in many cases, by doing really all they have available to them. Dying.
Yeah.
And then you got warm water fish coming down from the north from tropical balmy waters, and suddenly they're like, and in many cases, unable to bundle up, being fish, they also will react by dying.
Well, you know, our American system says, well, if you can't hack it, go die.
Purely meritocratic, like these fish had better die and
sink or swim.
Decrease the surplus population. Are there no workhouses?
Yeah, literally sink or swim.
Literally.
That's what fish are charged with.
It's their only choice. When you think about fish free will, it's sink or it's swim. And in this case, a lot of them sink. And
I guess get eaten is the third option that fish have.
And as we learn often in these kind of ecologically minded omnibus entries, nothing's all upside or all downside. Okay. You know, just like in a Miyazaki movie.
Wait, are you teaching the controversy here about whether fish live or die?
Bad for fish, good for the seabirds who have learned that this is the spot where there's massive fish die-offs all the time. And it's basically a big Caesar's Palace buffet for the boobies and pelicans and cormorants that live off of Western South America.
I wonder if also like clams and octopus and other bottom feeders are also like under there.
Just waiting for fish to sink.
Yeah, picking up all the fish junk.
Maybe they're just eating the heads that the birds leave by. I guess the birds probably eat the heads.
What, roly-poly fish heads?
Yeah, that's the only kind.
Uh-huh.
The Inca were, I think, the first people to recognize that there was something pretty cool going on here off the coast of Peru.
They would have been, given that they were the people.
The only people around. Inca being Quechua for the only people who exist. In fact, the word guano comes from a Quechua word. That was their word for dung, guano.
Oh, and also for dung that were people dung?
Yeah, I think they were like, hey, did you do a guano? Uh-huh. Like to their 2-year-old, they're like, hey, did you do a guano? Did you do a guano in your pants?
Uh-huh.
But the reason why they would, you know, they needed a word for dung because they were fertilizing their fields with dung, of course.
Right.
And it turned...
Well, what kind, like llama dung?
Llama, vicuña. Let's teach the controversy. Sure. Well, what they quickly learned was that the best dung for their fields was bird droppings.
You got to learn that sometime.
Bird droppings turned out to be amazing. And so, you know, with their ancestral lore, just being in touch with the land and the mountains.
Yeah, they were noble people.
The Inca were like, it's very important that you harvest bird droppings. They probably did think it was lucky because it was giving them 3 times as much corn and whatever weird yam-like thing they grew. And
I wonder if that's why we think bird droppings are lucky, because they improve the crops.
Well, this actually, that Inca knowledge got out and it changed the world.
Oh, wait a minute. That was not knowledge that we had prior to learning about Inca culture as we destroyed it?
Well, I think people still knew you put animal poop in the fields. Right. The world realizing that that bird droppings were a special concentrated source of what we now know to be nitrogen, is great for soil.
That didn't come from crops growing much better around telephone poles?
In the case of, right, and all the grass turning brown around fire hydrants, you want nitrogen, but not too much. It actually comes to us from previous omnibus honoree Alexander Humboldt, the great naturalist.
Wait, do we have, honorees? I thought you were saying that somebody wrote in. And I was like, is this some Patreon level?
Yes.
He was the honoree level?
He was 220 years old, and he was like, I've been listening to your show for quite some time. No, he's the famous explorer naturalist who brought back to Europe all this knowledge of cataloging pretty much South American everything.
Yeah, we've talked about him.
Yeah. He, in 1802, included in a book the local Peruvian knowledge that you would need bird poop if you wanted your crops to grow big. And in fact, that's where he gave Europe the Inca name for it, the Quechua guano, which became our guano, the word we still use for bat and bird poop, even though it's arguable whether we need a separate word for jointly bat and bird poop.
Hmm.
We could just say poop or dung and then just add bird or bat as appropriate.
Yes,
the idea that a flying creature would have something different about their poop.
But the thing is, there is something different about the poop of flying creatures, which is that it might land on you.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
But in this case, Humboldt was saying you want it to land on you because this stuff is so good for crops. And it turns out that off the coast of South America, where those two currents meet, are some rocky uninhabited islands, the Chincha Islands. The
guano Islands.
Which are literally 200 feet deep in guano, or at least in 1802.
200 feet deep. So that's like a 15-story building,
yes. And in fact, when they started digging out the guano, they were wondering, are we going to find a 15-story building down here from the Tartarian Empire?
It's been
deluged in tartar sauce.
Yeah, giant energy-generating domes of St. Peter.
This is how the Inca powered their cobalt mines,
right.
I think. And because the great thing about this part of the world is it's dry. So the islands, the rain never leaches the guano into the sea.
I mean, the great thing about them from a guano perspective.
Who would be bummed that the Chincha Islands are dry, in your opinion? Like a thirsty man washed ashore there, perhaps?
Okay. That's a good example.
He'd be like, when's it going to rain? I bet it rains soon. And boy, is he in for a rude awakening.
Somebody that wanted to grow almonds there.
Exactly. Exactly. Not a lot of agriculture on the Chincha Islands. But Europe takes note of Humboldt's book. And then, you know, it hits the UK. It hits Europe first. In 1840, the first guano ship, you know, a clipper ship, rounds Cape Horn, heading back to Europe, laden down with 182 tons of guano, and pulls into London with white gold, laden with something no one has seen before, a new kind of hopeful fertilizer that markets are already eager to try out.
Think about that for a second. Like, at what point in capitalism and the development of the world did somebody say, of all the things we could bring back from the New World in this ship, we're going to fill it with bird dung?
And wow. And London would have seen, of course, scattered bird dung on the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral, for example, where that lady is feeding the birds for tuppence a bag. But the idea that a ship would have 182 tons of it must have blown their little minds.
Blown their minds until they saw the results.
And mid-Atlantic farmers, I think, are the in the Americas, are the first to see this. They are told by scientists that this is going to work, and they try it out, and they realize suddenly all these tobacco plantation owners and produce farmers, they realize that their smokes and their veggie, they can triple their yields, basically, if they use this miracle-grow substance from the Peruvian Chincha Islands, worth its weight in gold.
One more reason to trust scientists.
Tripling your yield. So this leads to a huge guano boom. You know, the first ship gets to the U.S. in 1844, and we just have an insatiable appetite for bird crap at this point. By the Civil War, Europe has received 435,000 tons of guano from Central America, from South America.
So let me ask you some guano-related questions.
Yes.
Once you have applied guano to your fields, how long before you need the next guano drop?
Well, my guess is, like, it's very, very nitrogen rich.
Yeah.
So you may get, you know, it's a way of, you know, you could do the same thing with nitrogen fixating or fixing crops, you know, planting soybeans or whatever.
Yeah.
But typically in that kind of thing, you can do a cycle where you plant soybeans one year and you get you can get a good years out of your nitrogen leaching.
Yeah.
Crop. So I assume it's the same way here, that you might get years and years of increased yields from using this super fertilizer.
But wait, did they already know about growing soybeans and then plowing them under? Like, or was that something they figured out later in time? Because that feels almost like a Dust Bowl era.
I mean, I want to say crop rotation actually came from like contact with like very early agricultural fields. I guess China, going back thousands of years, had two and three field systems. So they knew you would have to like leave a field fallow for a while.
Right.
The discovery of nitrogen fixation, 1838. But that's, you know, that's understanding the
science.
The chemical process.
Science.
Were there tribes that knew like, yeah, just next year we'll put the other kind of bean here and we'll be fine. I'm not actually sure.
If the tide goes out really fast, run.
Yeah, they knew that before they knew what tsunamis were. So you had this trade, and weirdly, the gold rush in California really put a candle under the fuse of the guano boom because
the ships were bringing a bunch of pickaxes.
Well, it's as in the recent ice trade entry, you had ships that were bringing people around Cape Horn to California, and then, you know, really nothing to pick up there.
Yeah, right.
No almonds yet. No strawberries. So what do you bring back?
Video games.
From California?
Yeah.
Yeah, from
the famous video game.
From Silicon Valley.
Manufacturing. They stopped on the way.
The companies weren't there, but they were mining raw video games in San Jose. Uh-huh. And Mountain View at the time. They're chipping pixels out of the rock.
The question is, what did they need to take from California to South America and drop off? in order then to fill up with guano?
That's a good question. They might have had to take a loss
on
that short leg. Yeah, exactly.
What did they make in San Francisco?
Did they have rice in Peru at the time? Maybe, but not roni, possibly.
They didn't have the roni.
And they didn't have the little spice packet.
Yeah, and the little cable car. Ding, ding.
So now they have something they can take back. They can go from San Francisco down to the Chincha Islands, load up with 100, 200 tons of guano, and then go back around Cape Horn. These were dangerous journeys, and it's kind of a sad story. As you might expect, this was an exploitative work environment.
That's how we pronounce it.
Exploitative.
Exploitative.
Exploitative. Exploitation, therefore. Mm-hmm. Exploitative.
Mm-hmm.
Eat your exploitators. The mining was largely done by indentured Chinese labor, some of whom had been kidnapped,
Chinese labor, huh?
Yeah, the worst kind.
Ancient Chinese.
Is this a commercial?
Never mind.
You don't want to try this one. It's about modern day slavery.
No, it was about 1970s television commercial, like 80% of the things I say.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I actually know what you're talking about now. They would kidnap workers in China or tell them they were going to get rich in the gold fields or whatever. And then some would be diverted to Peru and find themselves chipping bird crap, 200 feet of bird crap off of the limestone of the Chincha Islands.
That's even worse than building railroads.
It's pretty bad. And that part of the world kind of had a monopoly. Like, I don't want to say Peru got rich, because this is a classic kind of debtor state scenario where a series of corrupt and unstable governments in Peru get a kickback, but really all the money winds up in European exchanges.
Yeah.
Nobody in Peru is actually getting rich off of their amazing, you got to have guns, germs, and steel, but basically the people with guns, germs, and steel will steal the guano from the people who just have guano and nitrates and
guns, germs, cobalt. And the big steel.
That's
Am I right?
Stealing from the developing world.
Oh no, I thought we were talking about stealing in the 2000 and whatever election. Guns, germs, and the big steel.
You still call the 2000 election the big steel?
I don't know. It's coming back. It's coming back now that...
I totally forgot we used to call that the big steel.
When did we used to call it that?
No, it was... When I say we, I mean the New Republic.
Yeah, the New Republic.
So Peru's pretty much got all the world's guano.
Well, now, how is that possible? There are birds all over the world. There are rocky outcrops all over.
They're pooping, but they're not pooping anywhere dry, where it just piles up and turns into a neat white powder.
Oh, like, I see.
Off the coast of Peru, it hardly ever rains.
So all the puffins in Alaska, their guano's getting washed.
There's nothing reactive to do anything to the nitrogen. It's all still super nitrogen-rich powder, and it all just sits there like snow that
right.
never melts.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so the U.S. tries, the U.S. is like, well, let's see if the Caribbean has birds pooping. And it does, but it's just not quite as good. But that doesn't mean that we're not trying, because it's just a license to print money. So all these entrepreneurs are like, where is the next bird crap gold rush going to be?
Where is the next bird crap gold rush? Where is
they were just constantly chanting that
crap gold rush
over and over in unison, like monks.
Well, the thing is, I'm now trying to figure out, if I had to go look for a giant bunch of dry bird poop, where would I go? Tell me, Ken.
Well, in this case, they go to the Caribbean just because it's nearby.
Yeah, right. But that's like looking for your car keys under a streetlight.
Yeah, but this is where in the Caribbean, the international incident happens that kind of jumpstarts Congress to take bizarre action. There's an island about 350 miles north off the coast of Venezuela called Aves.
Aves.
And in 1854, a U.S. ship arrives and claims the island. They set up a pole.
Yeah.
Apparently, they don't have a flag.
They just put a pole in the ground, and that's enough?
Well, the description of it says it's a liberty pole, like the Roman-era thing where you put a Phrygian cap, a red cap, on a stick.
Yeah.
Although I'm not clear why that would work. And in this case, it just appears to be they put some ballast from the ship on a pole.
A liberty pole.
Stuck it in the island and even left some females. They had brought women as if they were going to settle the island.
Okay.
And then they were like, there's guano here. And they all head out to go get some guano mining equipment.
But they left the women?
They must have taken the women. I think they left the island uninhabited. And while they're gone...
Maybe they wiped some liberty on the top of the pole. And then they put it up there where the locals couldn't get to it.
Like swabbing your nose? Like they just, they take a pole and they smear it in Liberty?
You know that Americans everywhere they go are exporting Liberty.
We're just spreading Liberty.
Yeah, maybe that's what was in the boat instead of guano tools.
There were no people on the island to liberate, but that didn't stop them. By the time they get back with their guano mining supplies, a British ship has arrived.
Those villains.
And has made the same discovery. And, you know, being
British.
Being civilized people, the British agree to divide the island with the American sailors, and they begin mining. And as I've already kind of foreshadowed, this is not does not turn out to be good quality money-making guano. But just that same year as the U.S. and the Brits have split up this uninhabited island, a Venezuelan warship arrives. Venezuela apparently having at least one warship in 1854.
Was that its final form?
Yeah, that's the state of the Navy today is also this ship. And they say this is actually our territorial land. And a big international incident begins.
It's the Falklands of 1850s.
The Falklands of the Caribbean. And except this time there actually is a resource available beyond just national pride and wag the dog geopolitics. Like, this could be a ton of guano money, although, as we know, it turns out not to be.
One ton of guano money.
And so Congress acts. William Seward, best known for his later work in Alaska.
Our man in Havana.
He proposes to the U.S. Senate the Guano Islands Act of 1856. And the amazing thing about the one amazing thing about it is that it's still on the books.
No.
The Guano Islands Act is still 48 U.S. Code Chapter 8.
Surely not. And still enforced?
Still the law of the land. It begins, whenever any citizen of the United States discovers a deposit of guano on any island, rock, or key, not within the lawful jurisdiction of any other government and not occupied by the citizens of any other government, and takes peaceable possession thereof and occupies the same, such island, rock, or key may, at the discretion of the president, be considered as appertaining to the United States.
Around the world?
Around the world. Any American citizen can pop up on any island as long as there's guano and no people. There's two things you must have. Guano
and no people.
And no claim by anybody else.
Guano and no people.
And then the president can, at President Franklin Pierce's sole discretion, decide this is now, and the law is a little vague, appertaining to the United States.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly?
Right.
It appertains to us.
Is the Constitution in force there? Do all U.S. legal protections apply to people there? It's extremely and possibly intentionally vague because this has never appeared in any U.S. law, this idea that we would, you know, obviously we're marching westward, but that's with the idea that all these territories eventually become statehood and part of a great nation.
If a guano farmer from
falls in the woods.
China... Okay. Has a baby on an island that appertains to the United States, is that baby a U.S. citizen?
Or does he merely appertain to citizenship?
Yeah.
It's a new legal standard that, in fact, has been argued by the courts up to the modern day because this is not a real thing.
Using this as the example.
This is still the case law. This is still the relevant law on the books that must be interpreted by judiciary even today because this is the beginning of the U.S. having these insular areas that are not a territory that's part of the Union, that's going to be constitutionally America, but is some kind of extra asterisky gray area territory.
So you know about the controversy about the public beaches here in Washington.
Right.
Where somehow the legislature never decided whether private property extends to the low tide line, the high tide line, or some line in between, or whether, like some states like California, the public has access to all beaches.
Right.
But here in Washington, because we use the shellfish grounds, some of them are granted to the tribes.
Some existing settlements got grandfathered in when that law got written.
Yeah, because they had already occupied that. And
you
so,
can't piss off the rich or the law's not going to pass.
Anywhere you go in Washington and walk out on the beach, someone has a feeling about it. And every time they have brought it to the courts in Washington, they just kick the can down the road. They make a decision in the narrowest possible context and then leave it
undecided. Imagine a law like that, but it deals with islands anywhere on earth. And so you can, the same kind of decisions always come up when the Guano Islands Act are introduced in a, I was walking on a beach in the San Juans the other day and I stopped at a sign that said beach private up from here.
Yeah, right.
And another party was walking down from the private beach and they stopped and this woman said in the most like Karen-y passive aggressive way you could imagine, thank you for observing the sign. Not everyone does.
And I was like,
and I said, well, yeah, I mean, you can see why. You guys just got grandfathered in. And she said, oh, well, we would never do it. But, you know, we have some neighbors who would actually call the sheriff if they saw somebody walking their dogs on our beach. And she kept going on in this vein. And then her husband, I think, was a little bit alarmed and started talking to me about baseball.
Yeah, as husbands do.
Yeah, he was like, what will break the tension
here? I really don't want my wife to start an international incident. So, there's a guy here, or just right down the street here on the Normandy Park beach, who has a big sign, private beach past this point, that everybody ignores. And he actually sits out in a chair and yells at kids.
And is it true? Like that house predates the...
No.
Oh,
it's not. I mean, true. It's just one of these, like, he's going to try and argue that this is true. And everybody else is like, ah, whatever. And what's he going to do? Call the cops? The cops are like...
The state publishes maps. You can see.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. Because there's another place south of that beach where there are signs up saying private beach and the state of Washington does not agree. And I think in this case, it was just some land conservancy people who were like, yeah, that bluff collapses sometimes. Let's put up a sign that says, this is not public beach.
Yeah, I mean, it takes zero. I mean, it takes very little effort. It doesn't take zero effort, but it takes very little effort to put up a sign that says private beach. But for in my own experience with the Normandy Park police...
Which is extensive? You've only lived here like 2 years.
I know, but you know, I like to talk to the cops. They're not gonna, this guy, I'm sure he's already called his absolute limit of number of times.
They know his number on the speed dial.
So it just is like, he just really likes yelling at kids, like 8-year-old kids, get off my beach.
And 8-year-old kids might enjoy that. Like it's like deep in the species to have an old guy yell at you when you're playing.
Yeah. And then they go tee hee hee and run.
But this is just an extraordinary thing that President Pierce signs in 1856, saying that any American anywhere can claim land, and as long as there's bird poop, it's kind of American.
So it's the bird poop that makes it American.
Yeah, and it's funny because this is the beginning of, you know, there's no U.S. global imperialism even in embryo at this point. And suddenly in 1856, here it is, and it's jump-started by the delicious nitrates in bird poop.
And, yeah, this is pre-steamship. Yeah, this is pre-American global hegemony.
Pre-Spanish-American War.
Right.
And it's funny because it's, I mean, I guess this is the part of this entry that's compatible with Marxism. It's exactly what the knock on imperialism always was, that it's just some purely extractive thing.
Yeah.
That a bigger power will make up some legal justification and because there's no residence, there's no pretense of exporting democracy or Christianity or whatever. It really is just like, we're going to come in and this will appertain to us until we run out of stuff to take from you. And then then we don't care anymore.
But because there's no you either.
Well, there might be, you know, whoever's...
like a nearer person.
Right. The law does say there can't be a claim.
Right.
But, you know, you could just find some rocky outpost between Haiti and Jamaica, which is what happens later, and say, we don't recognize Haiti's claim. Because the courts came up with the 7-point test as to, you know, what would be approved by the State Department in the way of new American bird poop islands. But it turned out that the State Department was extremely lackadaisical or inconsistent in how they would apply the law.
Unsurprisingly.
Hard to believe.
Happened again.
From 1850s era government bureaucracy. You know, people would submit a perfectly cromulent claim that they would deny, and a totally shoddy one would be supported. People would claim islands that didn't exist, and the State Department would be like, okay, that's America now.
Sure.
You know, so totally fictional islands got greenlit. Finally, in the end, the State Department just got tired of running this whole dog and pony show and just started rubber stamping every request.
Wait, these fictional islands, were people just trolling?
Maybe they're like, later, if I do find an island here, I now have a convenient deed I can show. And the latitude's a little off. Or maybe it was a mistake or hearsay, or I better hurry up and file this.
But it seems more like this whole thing is meant to appeal to a pre-existing order among European states.
We were here first.
Yeah, they're not writing this in order to placate the Haitians or
yeah, because they don't care.
Yeah, they're
all these other powers are beneath contempt, so or beneath notice.
Yeah, they're doing this because they want to say something to Britain or Germany.
Well, we've got this law.
Yeah, right. But is there precedent for that kind of law to suddenly become international law?
It's very weird. And the reason why they're doing it, I think you're right, is largely Britain. Because this guano trade to Europe is largely bankrolled by British banks, suddenly Peru's monopoly over where the guano is kind of becomes a British monopoly over who profits from the guano.
And who profits from the guano.
And the U.S. is desperate enough to say, well, this is our law now, that any American can be the force of government here.
This is some manifest destiny stuff.
It really is, except there's no chance, there's no sense that that God wants us to farm this land or expand America to it. It really is like, as you say, a liberty pole to try to keep the French away or whatever happens. And a land grab begins now that the U.S. has kind of put the genie out of the bottle. The U.K. claims Christmas Island, Maldon Island. These are in the South Pacific, I think.
Oh, and the U.K. is doing this preemptively.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have the same law that like any British subject can do it. But like the Royal Navy will be like, hey, those islands off Namibia seem like they might have a similar climate. Let's go send the Royal Navy there and put up a flag.
And so does the Royal Navy put up a liberty pole, or do they put a hat on a stick, or what do they do?
I'm sure they fly a Union Jack. Yeah, like things have got to be shipshape in Bristol fashion.
Well, and that's the thing about the UK. They carry Union Jacks everywhere they go.
They're not like those ragtag Continentals who are just like, put a bucket on a pole. That's America now. And everybody's doing it, like, and all over the Pacific, because that's where a lot of these isolated islands that are bird nesting areas are, and not knowing which of them are going to have likely fertilizer, suddenly every country you could possibly imagine is claiming a guano island. France, the Kingdom of Hawaii, still then independent.
Sure. What did they claim? Just more of Hawaii?
Yeah, like the, you know, stretching west. Japan, Mexico, Germany, Australia, all these places passed domestic laws claiming certain guano islands in the Pacific, because this is the guano era and they don't want to miss out on the resulting monies.
But it's all domestic laws. There's no international court at this point. They're not meeting in London.
There's no treaty.
It's just like, I hereby pass a law.
And it's the Wild West, because like they're literally, you know, some of these dots, these islets of rock, have thousands of miles of ocean in all direction. So,
and they're busy killing whales at this time, and also
whaling powers a lot of it. You know, off the coast of Peru, that's perfect for ships heading to California around Cape Horn. But the reason why there's ships out in the Pacific sighting and thinking, oh, maybe guano, is whaling ships looking for a sidelight.
Yeah,
that's what is bringing Europeans to the South Pacific at that time. And there are, you know, even though there's never an international treaty, the Guano Islands Act figures in important legal decisions up to this day. But as you say, everybody's very gun-shy about the third rail of, are these islands actually America? Like, what does appertain even mean, like, constitution-wise?
What does appertain mean any-wise?
I think it does not appear otherwise in U.S. law as far as territoriality claims. Like, this is its debut and possibly lone appearance.
I mean, the word just means concern or pertain to.
It seems like it was words literally meaning belong. Maybe we're not chosen for a reason, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
That it's being left vague because
it just concerns
Congress.
America.
Congress knows it's a can of worms. Because again, America doesn't care. The stakes are low. Look, right. We just want our sailors to be scooping up all the guano, and not the Brits.
And then they discover that canned worms are an incredible export,
rich in phosphates. The island of Navassa in 1889 is located
fake name
south of Cuba. It does seem like a fake country. Like if that was in a James Bond movie, you'd be like, oh, he's going to overthrow the government. Navassa is not real.
Navassa.
It's south of Cuba, kind of between Jamaica and Hispaniola. There's a Haitian claim to it, but as you say, the U.S. doesn't care. The U.S. brings in a guano mining operation, and it is terrible, even by the standards of the indentured Chinese labor we've been talking about before. Weirdly, it's largely the work crews there on Navassa are mostly black, but they are not maybe the Caribbean people you're imagining. They are literally like convicts from Maryland state prisons who get shipped down from Baltimore to do hard labor in the Caribbean sun, mining bird poop on these terrible ammonia-smelling islands.
Caribbean sun.
Yeah, it's not really a Billy Ocean vibe down there. It's pretty awful.
What a weird thing.
And the conditions are exactly what you would think. They work long hours. Hot. They are not paid well. It's hot. People get put in the stocks, literally in the stocks, for breaking any company rule. The company, by the way, is the Nevassa Phosphate Company, you know, some Maryland-based concern that's got some in with the governor to let him use some convicts till they break them.
Yeah, the CIA used to overthrow the lawfully elected government of Nevassa.
This is the beginning of that. And, you know, there's company store that pays you in scrip. There's a lot of injuries because it's dangerous work. They're treating these workers as disposable because they are. It's 1889 and these are like black Maryland convicts and nobody cares. It's, and what it, the amazing thing is the bad conditions actually lead to an uprising.
Huh.
The workers get together and they say, no, sir. And
they shape some guns out of guano, and paint them black with shoe polish.
They mutiny and overthrow Whitey and kill three people.
Was there any kind of settlement? Did they clear some ground, clear the guano off of ground and build a like a general store and a stockade?
First thing you got to do is move 200 miles of... Yeah, I'm sure the company had set up an outpost there, you know, whatever the bare minimum needed to keep these workers working and keep the guano flowing. But this becomes a real cause célèbre because it's racially charged. Like white overseers have been killed by black labor, and boy, you can't let that cat out of the bag.
Did you just gently pronounce the R in cause célèbre?
Célèbre.
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 I like that. I just didn't want that to go by unremarked.
Well, you don't want to like. You don't want to say a raison d'être. You know, you want to say, you want to hit it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's context dependent.
It's called célèbre.
I remember Alex Trebek always used to say genre instead of genre or any other option.
He did?
Genre.
Genre?
I think he thought it was more of a authentic French-Canadian attempt.
Oh, sure.
But I still do it because I loved when Alex would say, this genre of pop music. So this now goes all the way to the Supreme Court, mostly because three of the men have been accused of murdering the managers, and this could be a death sentence.
Oh, because it's the United States.
Well, that's the question.
Is it?
It goes to the Supreme Court, and what they're considering is, what does the Guano Islands Act actually mean? Because this is their defense, that this is American law does not actually hold here. These islands appertain to the U.S. historically for economic reasons,
so
but you cannot try us here.
What happened in the middle of the 19th century if you killed your overseers on an island that no one had claimed? You just, it's not nobody's fault but mine?
Well, I mean, arguably you could say, well, the Haitians claim this. Maybe it's Haitian law? Or maybe could it be maritime or military law? I don't know. The prosecution's case is, nope, this is America, Guano Islands. You know, we don't want you killing white people in the streets of Baltimore, and you certainly can't do it here in Nevassa. That's the thin end of the wedge.
I see.
So racism appears to trump all else.
Sure.
And
As it often do.
And the court does find that the Guano Islands, they don't want to say that the Constitution holds there. Like the decision is very narrow, but it does say that U.S. law holds here, even if we do not have an opinion on whether this is constitutionally U.S. territory.
Oh, so it's...
They can face...
It's the same as American law applies in... What are some comparables?
No, I mean, it wouldn't be like an expat.
Midway Island or...
And it's not an... I mean, the funny thing about Midway is it was one of these atolls.
Oh.
Yeah, like that's...
Covered with boot.
Yeah, parts of... Like places that are still territorially U.S. American started out as bird poop islands, and the Guano Islands Act, and Midway is one of them.
Huh.
So it changes the course of World War II, the fact that there's this American outpost there. By this point, so this is all happening in federal courts. I think that's the jurisdictional question. It's federal court. And their appeal that this is not, the Guano Islands Act is unconstitutional, fails. And so the men do face either the death penalty or life in prison. But the bad treatment by the Nevassa Phosphate Company has now made all the headlines. And so now there's like muckraker reformer interest in these poor men getting railroaded just for killing their awful boss. Sure. I mean, who among us?
But typical muckraker carpetbagger prosecutors.
So the papers are all up in arms about these poor guys, and Benjamin Harrison, and people are outraged about how bad the treatment is, because it's legitimately bad, to the degree that President Benjamin Harrison agrees to commute their sentence after all the scandal of how awful the Nevassa Phosphate Company is. You know, I'm not saying it's great to kill Whitey, but in this case.
Well, you remember our angry review on Apple Podcasts saying that our podcast Omnibus is anti-white.
Well, I guess this is one case where we are literally we're in favor of these poor guano miners killing their evil bosses because they're tired of getting jerked around with at the company store.
We may not be anti-white, but we are pro-guano farmer.
We're anti the Nevassa Phosphate Company. Let's, like the Supreme Court, let's carve out a very narrow lane.
Okay, good.
And maybe they have executives of a more diverse executive base now.
Yeah, I bet they do.
In fact, do you want to hear what happens to the Nevassa Phosphate Company?
Yes.
In 1996, we're now going to jump ahead to the end of the 20th century and introduce you to a man named Bill Warren.
Hi, Bill.
Who is an eccentric San Diego man who is one of these sunken treasure diving guys.
Oh, yeah.
We love them, right?
Yeah, we do.
This guy's eccentric even by their standards. He was a singer. He was the Viking Cruise Line Entertainer of the Year in 1981.
Whoa.
You probably remember.
Okay, sure.
That, you know, real talent. He was a backup gospel singer for Jim and Tammy Faye.
Okay.
During the PTL days.
So born again.
I guess, or at least, you know, when the money's good. But, like, he appears to be just one of these get-rich-quick guys who has, you know, with a good voice. Like, he spent the 90s crisscrossing the former, now-opened former Soviet republics, doing covers of Frank Sinatra song, kind of as one of these, like, those Beatles look-alike bands that will do covers. Except he did it for Sinatra, to the degree that he said, yeah, like, the audience in Ukraine thinks I'm as good as Sinatra. Like, I'm kind of the Sinatra of Ukraine.
I bet he does say that. That seems unlikely, though. Tell me, you know, that was the era where there were a lot of treasure hunters thinking they were going to find Spanish galleons.
Blackbeard's gold or whatever.
But now, explain again how he factors into this.
Well, in addition to his touring the Ukraine as Frank Sinatra, in addition to his trying to sell Tasmanian tiger pelts across state lines and being told by the government that he cannot because that's still on the endangered species list.
Tasmanian tigers.
To which he replies, the last one was seen 30 years ago. This thing is extinct. And the government says, yeah, it's extremely endangered. It might be extinct. That's why you can't transport the pelts.
Well, and how is he finding pelts?
I don't know. Historically, he's not hunting them, but like, he's got a pelt trading business, and he's very annoyed that the Endangered Species Act applies to possibly extinct species. He'd be like, what if I had a brontosaurus belt? And the Clinton administration is like, do you have a brontosaurus belt? Well, no, but you can't prove there's Tasmanian tigers anymore either. Anyway, so he's having a hard time with the Interior Department or whoever manages the Endangered Species Act. He runs into the grandson of the Nevassa Phosphate Company owners from the 19th century, like a descendant.
Like runs into him at a club or runs into him as part of his,
I don't know. Let's say he's sitting next to the guy in an airport lounge.
Okay, sure.
I don't know, but it's a chance thing. But he finds out that this guy claims to have these Caribbean land rights in the Pacific, and he's not thinking about guano because, you know, a lot of us don't immediately think about guano in any money-making scenario.
Speak for yourself.
But he thinks this is a place kind of equidistant between Jamaica, Cuba, and Hispaniola, where I could put a base for my salvage operations for all these lost Spanish galleons. So he eagerly buys these questionable NPC Nevassa Phosphate Company rights to this uninhabited island. And, you know, all these places just get totally mined over and strip mined to death.
He buys it with the money he got from selling Tasmanian tiger hats?
It's probably his cut of the door at Ukrainian Sinatra cover concerts.
Okay, sure.
I'm going to imagine.
Sure.
Unless he really took good care of that 700 Club PTL money.
Sure. Okay, I see. He's cobbling it together.
Or maybe his Viking Entertainer of the Year Award plaque gets pawned at some point.
So all the guano was already scraped off of these rocks. There was no in, there was no valuable export.
Well, it's been 100 years. Birds keep pooping.
Sure.
But the problem is the birds are pooping faster than backhoes can de-guanofy these islands now. And this was never a super nitrogen-rich guano anyway, but he thinks, he does his back-of-the-envelope math and thinks there's $2 billion in guano on this island. He thinks, well, this is perfect. That's, even by my standards, as the Sinatra of Ukraine, this is big money.
$2 billion.
I need to get a guano operation going here, stat. And that's when the federal government says, well, no, actually, you don't have those rights. And suddenly the Guano Islands Act is once again up in district and appellate U.S. courts trying to figure out, you know, does this guy own this island? You know, can he claim that 1856 law makes him the king of Navassa?
One of the interesting things that I discovered in my decade of going down to the Caribbean and puttering around Jimmy Buffett style.
Listening to Jimmy Buffett.
In my little sloop, in my sloop John B, John R.
Sloop John R.
Is that, you know, in the Bahamas, there are a couple of dozen or more uninhabited islands in the Bahamas where it's just like, yeah, there's nothing there. There's no water. There's palm trees and there's lovely beaches, but no reason for people to be there.
You could have a fire festival on one of them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we motor over during the day. We have a big rave, and then we motor back with models to the good islands. So it does seem like there's lots of islands in the Caribbean that you could just go down and say, this appertains to me.
I'm an American. I see a bird poop right over there. I don't see any Jamaican or Bahamian police here.
So now the government is going back on its 100-year-long tradition and saying, actually, appertain doesn't mean what you think it means.
Well, I think they do. They, again, totally want to sideswipe this question because it's now been 150 years and a lot of these places are, you know, recognized U.S. territories.
Oh, so this might open up an argument that Midway doesn't belong to the United States?
Yeah, or I think there's maybe still 9 territories in the United States
that started as guano
that started out as bird poop islands. And I think what happens is I think he gets sued by the government and tries to dismiss it saying, this is my property, Guano Islands Act. And the appellate court, district and appellate courts find a way to say, no, the Guano Islands Act is legitimate, but like a lot of time has gone by. Maybe those rights are not transferable. Haiti's claiming this island, et cetera, et cetera.
And this guy was like, I did it my way.
That's exactly what happens. Fly me to Navassa. I guess the ruling says that, you know, this was U.S. government property. You're saying it was abandoned and therefore you can reuse the Guano Islands Act. But in fact, you can't.
Huh.
There was no congressional authorization. That means the government never said Navassa is up for grabs. It seems very convenient, like a way to get rid of this crackpot.
Sure.
Without actually overturning any U.S. territorial claims in the Pacific.
Oh, wait. Elsewhere. So they just said it was specific to Navassa. Yeah.
Yeah. He's appealing the government saying, nope, get off of Navassa. That's not yours. Hmm. Now, jumping back to before Bill Warren's time, bye, Bill. The reason why the guano boom ended is pretty predictable. I mean, people realize you don't have to wait for fish to go through the guts of a booby.
Oh, you can just take
a cormorant.
Regular fish guts and grind them up.
Just take fish guts and make nitrogen-rich fertilizer out of them. The problem with that is wherever you do that stinks. Like they put one outside, I don't know, Woods Hole, Massachusetts or something, and every time the wind changed, everybody in town threw up.
Yeah.
So that didn't last. But then it turned out
You can just make nitrates.
You can industrially make nitrates. Yeah. I mean, you might need to mine them. And in fact, that's what happens. The dry deserts of Chile, for the same reason that the Chincha Islands are dry and full of nitrogen-rich guano, those deserts don't have nitrogen leaked away. They're full of rich nitrates. Pretty much the end of the guano boom is the War of the Pacific, where Chile invades Bolivia and Peru, saying, we want your Atacama nitrates, and Bolivia loses its seacoast. The guano market collapses because now Chile's got some monopoly on the fertilizer industry, and guano is over. And it was dwindling anyway. You know, these islands did not have inexhaustible bird poop. They had birds pooping slowly and Yo-yos mining quickly.
Birds pooping slowly.
Birds just never poop fast enough, right?
Yeah.
Think of all the good luck that's getting wasted because birds are not pooping enough.
Well, you know, all the seagulls down on Seattle's waterfront that survive on French fries, they seem to poop all the time.
Yeah, because Iver's French fries just go right through you.
I guess that's
you don't buy those, you just rent them. So that's kind of what ended the guano boom. But interestingly, it may be back.
The guano boom?
A second guano boom? A guano mini boom?
Guano boom number two.
Guano aftershock?
Okay, so tell me more about
the... Can you imagine why there might be a demand for guano today?
Why is there a demand for guano today? Guano Today is a great magazine, by the way.
My subscription lapsed.
Guano, why is guano on the rise? I know that there are some futurelings screaming at their headphones right now because they know why guano.
Well, I don't want to make this a game show. This is my day off. I don't need to ask you questions.
Okay, you tell me.
Imagine a Seattle liberal. What does he want above, he or she? What do they want above all?
A steel-cut oats.
They do, yeah. Well, that's kind of adjacent. They want organic produce.
Oh, of course they do.
They want food that has the little organic label, which means they can say, hey, this wasn't made with terrible nitrogen, phosphate-rich industrial fertilizers.
They'll pay three times as much for bananas that say organic on them as they will for just other bananas.
Which means you've got all these growers, all these farmers looking for organic fertilizers, and it's now been 150 years, and the Chincha Island... guano beds are getting refilled.
So is this one of those things where they want organic food and they're willing to pay the cost of three times as many hydrofluorocarbons into the atmosphere to ship the guano?
Maybe they ship the guano to wherever in South America they're...
They're growing
your $8 per carton blueberries. And then wastefully get shipped up to you in the winter.
Probably they ship it to China to be processed and then ship it back to Peru.
I mean, this stuff's still expensive. Guano now brings $500 a ton. Although that seems like a pretty good rate, actually. Probably not a lot of things you could get a ton of for $500.
I bet weed is more expensive.
And the idea now is that it's being more sustainably managed. You know, the Peruvian government's... you know, going to be aware that these are nesting and breeding grounds for birds and act accordingly. The tragedy is that there's fewer fish now in the Humboldt and Japanese currents and fewer birds. There were estimated to be 60 million birds in this region when the guano boom began in the 1850s or 1840s. And today there's like 4 billion birds left. It's literally like 1/15 the bird population that used to be there. And therefore, limited guano.
So you got to squeeze the birds a lot harder.
Yeah, you got to ring. You got to force feed Iver's French fries to these birds and then wring them out over your bucket. The birds hate it.
Yeah, sure. They
Plus,
do.
You can go to jail for squeezing a booby.
Yeah. Hmm. Hmm.
I'm tempted to end the episode there.
I wish you would.
But as I said, there are 9 U.S. territories that were started out as bird poop islands. We mentioned Midway, which might have swung World War II, so let's hear it for bird poop.
Yeah.
Also, Howland Atoll in the South Pacific, where that's where Amelia Earhart took off from. So all these places we built airfields in the early 20th century. And then Johnston Atoll in the South Pacific, which became the big nuclear testing site. So all those big aerial... nukes over the Pacific, and then later it was, I think, biological and chemical weapons testing. Mm-hmm.
Somewhat accounting for the decline of the 60 billion birds.
I think I see a connection. We stored all our Agent Orange on Johnston Atoll during Vietnam. So there really is, you can kind of see the American century, the American empire, like in terms of this guano story, beginning with, Yeah, we've got some claims across the world, as long as we can get something out of it, all the way through, we're not using that anymore. Let's put Agent Orange there.
Yeah, right. Blow up the moon. And that concludes the Guano Islands Act, entry 554.PS10407, certificate number 39867 in the Omnibus. Futurelings, social media, oof, boy, am I right?
Social media, oof.
Talk about the guano of the 21st century. I wish there was a way to mine the guano.
Except it's not good luck.
All right. Well, if it still exists in your era, which we already know it doesn't because it barely exists in our era, although I'm still on Instagram every damn day, like dancing my little, you know, tap dancing out my tune for the 17,000 people that I'm like, hi, friends.
I mean, that's a good enough crowd that you feel justified. You're not just like, this is, what am I doing on this empty stage?
Well, yeah, I guess.
You can imagine 17,000 people filling an arena mm-hmm. to see you talk about your road trip.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I mean, that was a little bit of a humble brag, but then I'm doing it to you who are like, oh, yeah, my 700 million followers really.
I mean, but the market has collapsed. This is like the War of the Pacific killing off Guana, because what is 500,000 Twitter followers worth today?
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing.
Yeah.
They're not there. They're not monetizable.
No, all 17,000 of my Instagram followers, they're all posting pictures of their cats and their souffles. So I know they're all real.
A lively community.
Except every once in a while, like a very attractive woman from Nigeria or Vietnam sends me a DM asking me some anodyne question. And I'm like,
like how to get her U.S. residency?
Yeah, I'm not sure you're real.
I am from Slovenia, but I would like to appertain to the United States.
Hello, I really enjoyed your post. Friend me. Anyway, find us Lost in Time at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick. But what still exists is email. So email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com and tell us your personal stories of guano, of appertaining to the United States.
This will be on the addenda show.
Mm-hmm.
We need you.
We love addenda.
We're using you to fertilize our bonus episodes.
You can mail us things at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Ken, have you got any mailbag over there?
I don't know if it's... It's not photogenic enough, although Junichiro does have delight. Look at this handwriting. Very nice.
That's wonderful handwriting.
He's been going through the old episodes. Oh, no. He's been listened to every episode of the show many times.
Well done.
That's the moment when you do the yikes emoji face, when you're like, what's coming next in this letter?
You know, it might be like me and reading Shakespeare in prison. He might be in prison and reading the Shakespeare of listening to Omnibus.
Do they let you have podcasts in prison?
I guess.
Seems like Cruel and Unusual Punishment would apply there.
I mean, well, don't they? I mean, they let you have a television if you're on good behavior. Why wouldn't they give you headphones?
They let you have podcasts, but it's only Joe Rogan.
Oh, no. That's the last podcast on the dial.
But he just listened to the Gordon Lish episode, the one about...
Gordon Lish?
Yeah, G. Gordon Lish, breaking into Watergate. No, Raymond Carver's editor? Did we do a show
yeah.
about this?
Yeah.
Does this ring a bell to you?
We did. He's the one that made Raymond Carver sound good by taking out four of five words.
By just leaving the skeleton of his work. Thanks to you, I see Gordon Lish in my backspace and delete buttons. And every time he uses backspace or delete to trim down his text, he yells Lish.
Lish!
While destroying almost everything I make.
No, but he's not doing it like Newman. He's actually doing it like Lish.
Celebratorily.
Yeah, like I'm lishing the shit out of this
document. I'm going to lish these words, these unnecessary words.
Wow, I like that a lot.
And he likes the Jude Law movie that was made about Gordon Lish's life. Thanks for the record.
I did not know about it.
Wait, but this says March 2019.
What, the letter came in March 2019?
Well, that's what the letter says.
No.
It came from Canada. I'm trying to read this postmark.
Wait, are you saying that this is one of those lost in the mail letters?
It might be.
That's been gone for...
Don't you love those stories where something's been in the lost behind somebody's drywall for 100 years and then suddenly you get a letter from your great-grandmother?
I just saw one the other day of that some elementary school or some high school found a girl's purse that had fallen behind the lockers.
Well, in the old days, you could read a postmark and see what the date was. But this just says 3715 V7B 23121-20835. That's not helpful. There's nothing there that could be a date, right?
No. But why would you conclude that it was from 2019?
Because the bottom of his letter says Junichiro, March 2019. Like, maybe he finally mailed it 4 years later?
Huh.
Was it found in his effects? Did he survive the pandemic? Junichiro, help us solve this mystery. Did you, in fact, mail this 4.5 years ago? Because if so, we apologize for our tardy reply.
I mean, it must have been a lot easier to listen to every episode of Omnibus all the way through multiple times.
That's why he keeps listening to Gordon Lish over and over. It's like there's not enough. They're not making enough guano. He's Canadian. Do you think the Canadian mails are terrible? Did Canadian Post just take 4 years to get this across the border?
I'm not going to say anything bad about the Canadian Post because I bet, you know, like other things in Canada, I bet you it works amazingly.
I bet it's illegal to make fun of it. You'll get Mounties at your house. Thank you for your note, Junichiro. We don't understand why it time traveled, and we'd like to know more if you are listening to this.
Another way you can support the show, besides time traveling, if you can time travel back to a time when the price of gold was $24 an ounce and send us a bunch of gold.
Send us Apple stock from 1984.
That would be fantastic. But otherwise, you can support the show by going to patreon.com/omnibusproject and pledging a little monthly...
A mere token of your affection.
Yeah, just like, oh, I love Omnibus and I listen to it all the time to drown out the sound of my nagging husband. send us whatever you think that's worth.
A mere pittance.
Yeah, probably $1,800 a month to patreon.com/omnibusproject. And in return, we will give you 50 backlogged podcasts where we answer reader mail. And more to come every month, plus lots of other stuff. It's a fun place to explore. Patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.